It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Because they can, it's a mechanism to drag it out long enough to be able to suck everything of value out of every human being on the planet. If they can, they will. That's all I need to know. You know, can they? Well, then they are. I mean, you know, well, they wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong. I mean, you know, I know better than that, okay? So I'm just trying to understand how they're doing it so I can avoid it. Maybe I can just go over here, a nice little valley, and just, you know, I can just, you know, raise grandchildren until they're 10, 15, and start over and use the internet or even resource material and information and having classes. Talking on the morning show with people up in New Hampshire, they have a lot of people going up there, and they're just having their own little universities, just private classes every day. You know, they have curriculum that they're studying and learning, all the people that have skills, they're professors or they, you know, engineers and industry and how to do CAD programs, milling, you know, all kinds of stuff. Heck, I can learn a lot of stuff from all the people that we know around here. We just like, you know, all right, learn me. You know, I won't be learnified, okay? And we would be, you know, and that's already happening a lot here, the gardening, the chickens, a lot. You know, we all have been learning from each other about that. So this is where I see this is going, and hopefully we'd be able to last a little bit longer than they anticipate, but that just means all the longer they're going to keep taking everything everybody has, everything they have. So I'm like, what are you seeing, how they're doing it?
They're doing it under cover of darkness. I'll put it this way. I mean, you know how closely I watch this stuff. And, you know, I can't be negative around my wife and daughters. You know, I have a wife of 21 years and I have two daughters, 20 and 14. And the thing is, you know, it's all really negative. It's really ugly. And every day it gets uglier. And the thing is, I have to find comedy anywhere that I can. And so that we can just live through it and just kind of, you know, have a light, fun air around the house. So we use a lot of comedy at home and just, you know, do what we can to just keep our spirits up and just have fun, because it is really a dark, dark period. I mean, I look at this stuff like the idea that the Federal Reserve is using the too big to fail banks, basically pumped prime with taxpayer monies through the 2008 bailout. and about $3 trillion worth of Fed money, and now they're using it another way to basically keep the party going as long as they can to suck every dollar they can out of each and every one of us.
You know, the only way that you can keep the party going is with other people's money. I mean, you know, they accumulate up, they don't care what happens. They just create a system under which you pool everybody's money into, you know, big buckets of money, and then it's just a fight over the bucket. You know, I just want a bigger piece of the pie. And it's a diminishing pie. I mean, it'd be better off. I'd take a little bitty sliver, you know, in my own little economic prowess on my own, if in an enormous pie. I'm doing better off than what? I win. I got all of the none pie. I mean, you know, I don't see the benefit in that. You know, we have Butler Schaefer. He is a law professor in Southern California, and he was the mentor for Mark Victor. You know, that's my partner in the Freedom Summit. And he's a criminal defense attorney here. And he writes for, Butler Schaefer writes for Lou Rockwell a lot. And he's written a lot of books on chaos and a lot of things. And he has one. We're going to have him on by the end of the week, early next week. The producer's already working on getting him on. I've had him on many times. And I'm going, I got to have him on because he writes this good article. It's good. Repudiate government debt. A modest solution. We're done. No, we're not going to pay it. You know, we every individual here, we secede from the United States. We're not citizens. Whatever. We're not playing anymore. Okay. Well, he has a quote from Albert Einstein here. It says, "We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them." Well, they're going to keep doing it. You know, it's always other people's money. Governments in America, at both the state and federal level, are in an escalating state of bankruptcy. Politicians, media hacks, and academians propose the kinds of responses reminiscent of the classic definition of insanity, to keep repeating the same actions expecting a different result. Increase income taxes, cut spending, enact a federal sales tax, tax junk food and tanning salons are just a few of the suggestions being made by those intent on recycling political solutions to politically generated problems. At the center of all this is a national debt that has arisen from a basic truth that statists prefer to ignore. Human beings are much less thrifty in spending other people's money than they are with their own. Let me control your checkbook, and I will come up with a much different pattern of expenditures than you would have. We are much more generous with the lives and property of others, a state of mind upon which political systems depend for their existence.
Right. You know, they're just trying to keep it going, and, you know, they're going to do everything that they possibly can to keep it going. And the thing is, yes, it is insanity, Ernie, because in my opinion, the people at the very top who are running the show are psychopaths. Okay? I mean, that's my opinion. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to soften
it. They're certainly, yeah. I mean, you know, they don't care about other people. I mean, and they think they're justified in taking your money because you're letting them. They're going, yeah, well, you're stupid enough to let me. Then you're stupid enough, you know, to be stupid and take advantage because you're stupid. I mean, you know, I get it. You know, that's what, you know, a wolf doesn't feel sorry for his dinner. You know, he's going, hey, man, you know, I caught you. You know, I win. And that's the mentality these people have. And it's the kind of mentality that's fostered with our system. You know, it's how it's pushed. They'll sit there and go on about making good sheep out of people. Oh, thou shalt not aggress against anyone that's beating you over the head. You know, we're all about the non-initiation of force, not the non-force. You know, when somebody's sitting there choking the life out of me, you know, I'm like, hey, can I stop you from trying to stop me from breathing? I vote that. You know, and the one thing that they have, you know, what was interesting was they did the taxing of tanning salons, okay, as a luxury thing. I mean, this is serious. That's what they're doing. We're going to tax tanning salons. Well, who goes in to get a tan? All the white people. So they did a racial discrimination suit. They're going, hey, man, you know, you're the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause. You're taxing white people. In proportion, yeah, you don't have a lot of black people or Hispanics going to tanning salons. Yeah. It's all the white people's getting taxed. We're being discriminated against for having salons taxed. And they use that as their argument. I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, but
right.
But I'm going, seriously, I mean, can we get a little bit more basic, you know, on you're just taxing anything? I'm just, because if you have to resort to that, you know, that the white people are being proportionally taxed greater than somebody else. I'm going, you know, that's your best argument, you know, but hey, at least it's, you know, it's funny, you know, so whatever.
I mean, they're talking about taxing people's health insurance that you get, you know, with your job. And they're talking about a value-added tax, you know, possibly at the end of the year when they come up with their recommendations from Obama's commission.
You know, this is a perfect example. It was called the Laffer Curve. Let me make a note of that. I want to talk about that when we come back. And the Laffer Curve, there's more to that story than you realize. He was like supply-side economics, Reagan guy, and so on, and Laffer came here to the Valley, and we talked to him. It was an interesting conversation, and it tells you how they're really thinking. Think he's a good guy? We'll find out when we come back here on Declare Your Independence.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
You know, we got Jack Gregson. He's definitely a lunatic. He's making sure that we all know we're all going down, man. We're all going down. You know, but there's still people, you know, screaming. They want in the wheelhouse. You know, put me at the wheel of Titanic. I'll something as it goes down. But nobody ever cares about the people. You know, let's save the people. Screw the ship of state. You know, we're talking about the Laffer Curve. And Laffer comes from, you know, I can't remember his name. It was something Laffer.
Author.
You know?
Arthur
Laffer is his name. And what it is the Laffer Curve. Imagine this. If you have 0% tax rate, how much in taxes are you raising? Probably close to zero, okay? Maybe volunteer, somebody send you a check. But if you have 100% tax rate, and everybody did, you go buy anything, 100% tax rate on everything. 100% of it, all the money you pay for it goes to taxes. How much money, tax money, do you raise then? You raise zero. So the Laffer Curve was an expression of the concept that there, somewhere, there is a maximum revenue that is generated. There's some percentage that you can get the most money by setting a tax rate at a certain level that generates the most money for the government. I'll tell you a little story. Well, of course, a lot of Republicans use this. Hey, our taxes are too low, too high. They're too high. Democrats want too much money. You know, we have a curve. You generate more money for the government if you were to lower taxes. Well, during the Reagan administration, this became, you know, supply-side economics. They called it, you know, Reaganomics, voodoo economics, George Bush did when he's running against, you know, Reagan, all this kind of stuff. But it's not a hard concept to realize. You get away with, do away with regulations and taxes and all that kind of stuff. You have economic activity. You create a more robust economy, and then you have more money went to the government, which is exactly what happened. Well, then, of course, you know, Stephen Molyneux that we had on, he's like, let me tell you, do you want to guarantee that you got a police state and big government that's going to take away all your rights? Have a productive economy. The state's going to get a whole bunch of money, and they're going to screw you with it. That's what happens. And then throughout history, that's what happens. The bigger the state gets, the more money they have, the less freedoms you get, until it goes down to the bottom and starts all over again, over and over and over. So the ideal situation is, you know, stop funding this government thing. Quit. Well, Art Laffer came to Phoenix a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, and he was speaking downtown, and it was put on. He was the featured speaker by the Goldwater Institute here. Well, we used to do advertising for the Goldwater Institute. When they have something like that, we'd trade out. You know, we'd let them put up. We know a lot of the guys down there. And they do a lot of papers and free market stuff, and Institute for Justice and Clint Bullock and these guys hang out together. And they, you know, do this kind of, you know, freedom education thing. So we know a lot of these guys. But they're still Republicans. I mean, they're still playing the game. You know, it's all about, you know, the Democrats don't know how to rule you as good as we do, you know. So I'm like, okay, so that's really what's going on. It's a Republican thing. Well, they bring Laffer in, And we trade out some advertising promoting it in exchange for we get to go to the meeting. It costs like, I don't know, $100 or something like that, or $75. It depends on the different functions. Some of these things are expensive. So they'll give me, you know, 1, 2, 3 tickets. Well, usually they give me at least 2, sometimes 3 tickets for me as publisher, senior editor Pal Gamble, and the webmaster Tiger Gilbert. You know, we'd all go and we'd have a nice, you know, meal and, you know, lunch or dinner, and we'd see, you know, the woohoo and everybody putting on the dog, and we'll see some good speakers. Laffer came. And it was very clear to me, this guy is just a Republican operative. So I go, he's given this speech and so on, then it came time for Q&A. And I only had one question, okay? As he's explaining, Laffer, we got to find the right perfect rate on different. And he goes, and the secret is you just don't tax one thing; you tax everything. Everything, anything you income, gains, property tax, sales tax, income tax, tax. Any fee, tax, but you got to get it at the right rate. And you got to have, you know, low taxes enough that it generates the most income, but spread out over the entire economy so you can get the maximum revenue for the government. And I go, okay, well, here comes the libertarian question. What's my question, Jack? What am I going to ask?
No, you go ahead.
I go, it's a simple question. Why would you want to get the maximum money for the government? I mean, how come your goal is not, you know, I get the maximum money I get to keep from the government? So why do you want the maximum money for the government? And this is what he said without hesitation. He goes, well, so you can spend it.
Oh.
This is the Laffer curve guy.
Ow.
All right, this is what they do. So you can spend it. I'm done here. I can, yeah, I'm here all week. Tip your waitress. I'm from Phoenix, Phoenix. I mean, you know, I couldn't get out of there fast enough. I was like, okay, well, I mean, I'm going to listen to anything he has to say now? There's any reason for me to stay here any longer?
No.
And I think as the first chance we had, you know, Pal and I left, you know, I'm just going, wow. You know, I bet you it's on Freedom's Phoenix, that, you know, story, because Pal always did great stories on this. If you go to Freedom's Phoenix in the top navigation bar and you put up Laffer, you know, in the search thing here, I bet you that comes up. To occur in the current economy, came to Phoenix. Yep, there it is. Oh, yeah, this is good, good. Dr. Arthur Laffer came to Phoenix to deliver a luncheon lecture on May 10, 2006. While I and many others found his talk on the current and future economic situation disturbing and effusively myopic, it was fitting that it was brought to us courtesy of the sponsors of the Goldwater Institute. This institute is named after the beloved or despised, depending on your persuasion, Barry Goldwater. Goldwater's maverick, blah, 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 blah. Let's see, supply side end of the concept illustrated in, and it goes on and on and on. But they, the thing that I... Here, wait a minute. Let's see. Yeah, I don't want to have to read the whole thing. But, you know, this. So Pal did a good article on this. And the only thing I remember of the entire talk was asking him, and you want to raise all this money for what? So you can spend it. You know, he was advocating, and the reason, you know, a lot of people in there at the Goldwater Institute, you know, a lot of these guys are politicos. They're the Republican persuasion of, we want to carve up the government trough for us, okay? So this is, you know, libertarians, man, they're the conscience of. They always say, the libertarian flight is the conscience of the Republican Party, kind of conscience of them. And I'm going, I'm not their conscience. I don't even want to have anything to do with them. I'm out of that body, man. I just, oh, you guys are amazing. So whenever you hear about supply-side economics or Reaganomics or voodoo economics or, you know, the Laffer curve or everything, this is what they're talking about. Yes, by lowering taxes and regulations and so on, you create more economic activity and more money for the government.
Great.
Yeah. Is that your goal?
No.
You know, but and why? So they can spend it. They'll sit there and just tell you right straight to your face. That's why.
Yes.
And I was like dumbfounded by this. And I'm going, okay, next. And the thing is that he was from outside. I mean, he came from out of state. So all these people in there, they know who I am. You know, they know I'm a libertarian. They know Freedom's Phoenix. They know the radio. They get it. And when he said that, you know, it was like, Man, pen drop. There was no follow-up. Yep, okay. Just want to make sure I just wanted to make sure I clearly understood. Or so I gave some little quip, but I was like, everyone going, yeah? How are you feeling about it now, you know? So this is it's other people's money. You know, they just fall right into this. And you would think that, well, he's a conservative and good guy, and they quote him. And I'm going, they all have the same mentality. It's just what they're going to spend it on.
Like 10 more years of war in Afghanistan and Iraq.
You know, we got Eric Margolis is going on about going to Obama saying, tell the people the truth. Tell them the truth about what's going on in Afghanistan. This is, it's Vietnam without the humidity. You know, and in Iraq, what are they doing in Iraq? They just suspended to having the Iraqi parliament meet. They said, yeah, we're on vacation. We're not getting anything done. We're done. Do they got a government in Iraq? You know, they know they're just pretend. So I go, hey, we're just pretend anyway. We'll pretend we're working. We'll pretend we're going on vacation. You know, this is, oh, it's getting worse.
There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, let's take a look. You know, let's take a look at what's going on in Afghanistan, because it's going to affect a lot of stuff that's going on with us too. Eric Margolis is a weekly columnist. You know, his stuff is picked up by a lot of magazines and so on, and he's well known for his expertise on the Middle East. And let me see if I can find a Wikipedia on him. Here we go. He's an American-born journalist and writer. He is a contributing editor to the Toronto Sun, a chain of newspapers writing mainly about the Middle East, South Asia, and Islam, and appears frequently on Canadian television broadcasts as well as on CNN. A multinational, he holds residence in New York, Paris, Banff, and Banff, Canada. He was born in New York in New York City in 1940s, blah, 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 blah. Now, he has a lot of interest in the Middle East simply because, I mean, that's what he covered a lot. And then when we went into the war, we would use him a lot. And I think we had him on Charles' show. And I'll try and get him on. You know, there's a lot of the guys that I still need to work on this Middle East thing. I've been kind of holding off on that because I don't think we're at a point yet where we can get a summary of what's really going on. I'll tell you what I've been keeping track of is the Iraqi parliament. They're trying to give the impression that they have a functional government there, that they're, you know, kind of the U.S. is pulling out. They got their bases built. They got their big Vatican, you know, U.S. Embassy thing in Baghdad done. They got 14 bases all around Iraq. They're trying to, you know, it's kind of the deal. Look, man, we'll go. We got what we wanted. Okay. We're going to be here forever, y'all. Okay. We're going to have all our goodies here. We're going to have none shall pass on the ramparts. And now you guys can do whatever you want. We've got our presence here. We're all good. And, oh, by the way, we got that contract about, you know, just made sure our oil got underneath your sand. So, you know, it's, you know, we got taken care of. So now it's all about who's going to benefit and get their cut of the pie when it comes, you know, the oil flows. So I just want to, you know, let this kind of season a little bit and find out where, because it's so confusing. You can't, because I don't even think they know what's going on. And there's so many different factions going in there. But here we have Margolis writing about Obama. And he's going, you know, tell the Americans the truth about Afghanistan. Goodbye, fire-breathing General Stanley McChrystal. and your special forces mafia who were supposed to crush Afghan resistance to Western occupation. McChrystal was fired after rude remarks he and his staff made about the White House were printed in the American magazine Rolling Stone. President Barack Obama should have fired McChrystal when the loose-lipped general went public with demands that 40,000 more troops be sent to Afghanistan. McChrystal was the second U.S. commander in a row in Afghanistan to be fired, an ominous sign that the war was going very badly. He will now likely enter the Republican ranks as a martyr and become a Fox TV critic of Barack Obama. A more cerebral and political general, David Petraeus, quickly replaced McChrystal. In Iraq, General Petraeus managed to temporarily suppress resistance due to a mixture of deft bribery, good luck, and Iran's orders to Iraq's Shia Mahdi Army militia to temporarily end resistance. Washington hopes Petraeus will do the same in Afghanistan, though the two countries are very different. A lot of his success, they just paid him off. You know, there's tons of money, billions of dollars just going here. Just, you know, I tell you what, we're going to pay you to, it's kind of protection racket. We're going to pay you, you know, you're the ones bombing it. We're going to pay you to make sure there's no IEDs on this road. They're paying them not to put them out. That's what they're doing, you know. And then, of course, Iran, you know, is involved in this. They got some kind of deal going with them. It's all you see in the news, all this posturing about, you know, we're going to go, you have Joe Lieberman in Israel saying we're going to, you know, preemptively strike Iran. Why? Because, well, we can't let them have, you know, nuclear weapons. Well, of course, everybody's saying that they don't anyway. And my thing, I'm totally different. I'm like, so what if they do?
Right.
Oh, I'm like, you know, if I'm a little country in the Middle East, I'm thinking, you know what? I need some, you know, nuclear weapons. You know how I knew they weren't in Iraq? Because we attacked them. That's why I knew. You think a Saddam would go, eh, we're not going to do it. That would be bad. If he had them, he would have used them, I would imagine. And Iran, you know, we got China involved. You know, Russia's involved. You know, China's buying Iran oil. Heck, they got nuclear weapons. You know, they trade them. Hey, give them a discount, you know, if they buy them in bulk. We're playing games here, man. This is not good. Last week, the usually cautious Petraeus vowed from Kabul to win the Afghan war, which has cost the U.S. nearly $300 billion to date and 1,000 dead Americans. Figures for Afghan dead are carefully guarded, by the way. The problem, no one can define what winning really means. Afghanistan has become America's longest-running conflict. The escalating war now costs U.S. taxpayers $17 billion a month. President Obama's Afghan surge of 30,000 more troops will add another $30 billion. Each time the U.S. reinforces, Afghan resistance grows stronger. The Soviets ran into the same problem in the 80s, and it goes on and on about how much money we're in debt and we're screwed, okay? And you have hardly heard anything about Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, this is, you know, as soon as Obama got in there, you know, hey, and then we even have Michael Steele, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, he's coming out saying, oh, Afghanistan, that's Obama's war. Yeah, we're the peace guys now. Wow. We were never, Eurasia was always our enemy. It's a 1984 thing. Oh, so then you bring it back home and all this stuff, they're just spending all this money and everything. And we have, still one of the things I know you track, Jack, is the, property values, you know, here, and certainly we're in California where you're from. You know, I saw a story you had up today. I think it was you that put it up.
Yeah.
You know, about what's happening in California. I mean, it's getting worse and worse.
Right. Well, you've got 300,000 people that have lost their unemployment benefits just since the 1st of June. All right. And that's going to go up to 500,000 people very shortly. Here in Arizona, you've got, I think, about 57,000 people that have lost their unemployment benefits.
Well, they kept extending. These are people that have been on unemployment for a long time anyway.
99 weeks.
99 weeks. Oh, my goodness. It's almost 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, what's it normally? It's usually just a few months or something.
Well, they had extended it. They called it emergency extended benefits, and they kept extending it. And the thing is,
but what's it normally? I mean, normally it's not. I mean, it's not that long. I think maybe 120 days, or
it's about 26 weeks.
Okay, so 6 months or something. You know, all right. So I think what's that? 180 days or something. So here we have a 6 months extended in almost 2 years.
Right,
and then it runs out, and they're not getting an extension anymore.
No, they're not going to most likely extend the benefits. Obama wants to see if he can extend the benefits to
November,
December 1st, so they can get through the midterms. But the thing is, you know, there's no way to keep this together. I mean, I've been following real estate prices in Southern California for, well, let's say 35 years. And the thing is, I watched that whole area evolve over time from the time back 1959 is when I moved back to Southern California. So I've watched it evolve, and I know all of these areas there in Southern California like the back of my hand. And in fact, it's impossible for me to get lost there on any road. I can find my way anywhere. And when you see a price drop of 64% in an area like Malibu, California, which is the home of the stars, right along the coast, in 1 year, a 64% fall in prices in 1 year. And you have areas like Bel Air, which is a beautiful area up in the hills. That's seen a price drop of 24.9%. And Pacific Palisades, which is out there on the end of Palos Verdes Peninsula, 21% drop. That's a beautiful area. It overlooks some of the most beautiful bluffs in all of Southern California. You're talking a massive depression. These are not, you know, just slight drops. I mean, in the past month, we've had a 6% drop in the price of homes in Idaho, okay? And I think 5% in Alabama. But this is prime real estate. These homes are $1 or $2 million a piece or more.
This has been happening. We've been following this for years. Even when it was at the peak, we were screaming here that this was coming. And, I even got accused. Well, you're going to make it go if you keep saying that. Oh, man, I'm a powerful individual. I'm going to have all the economy drop because I say it. No, it's because we were looking for certain things. We'll tell you about what we were looking for and what happened when we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
I'm so sad. You know, I'm glad I got Jack Gregson in here. He's the business economist columnist we have on Freedom's Phoenix. About the best we can do for I tell you. You know, what is it you would say you are? I mean, you're always the doomsayer, man. You know, you're always with the negative ways.
I'm a truth teller, Ernie.
Yeah, negative ways. Well, I tell you, when the truth is negative, I don't know. I guess you should, you know, talk about it. Since he starts getting all, you know, using big words like quantitative easing and stuff. You know, I want to give you this. So you understand what it is, okay? The term quantitative easing describes a form of monetary policy used to increase the supply of money in an economy when the bank interest rate, discount rate, and or interbank interest rate, such as the Fed funds rate or overnight rate, is at or close to zero. A situation known as zero interest rate policy, meaning, you know, why would anybody, you know, anyway. The central bank purchases financial assets, including government paper and corporate bonds from banks and other financial institutions using money it has created ex nihilo, okay? So there's another word I got to find out what it is. They're purchasing government paper, being treasuries and, you know, bonds and corporate bonds and everything. And here you have the Fed. They're just buying this stuff up with money that it's created. What's this ex nihilo mean? Oh, so we go up there and we see, what does this say? Let's see. The Latin phrase ex nihilo means out of nothing! You know, So quantitative easing means we're printing paper out of money and buying whatever the heck you want. I mean, you know, whenever they use words like this that you don't know, they're lying to you. They're screwing with you. They're stealing from you. That's what they're doing. You know, and I'm just, don't make it stop. Oh. So what are we dealing with? You know, well, here we got it's so confusing that anytime I talk to experts, I think about it. My brother-in-law, he's one of the bond raters at Moody's in New York City. You know, I sit there with hours just asking him simple freaking questions, and it becomes obvious to me he has no freaking clue what he's doing. Oh, he knows exactly what he's, you know, his job is. Oh, I rate this based on this and this chart here and this dial that got turned. And if you turn this dial and you go left with this, it does this. And go right with that, it does that. And this is how it affects the economy and the interest rates. I mean, he's giving you all kinds of this Keynesian crap about, you know, how it, the economy works with, you know, whatever. And I'm going, yeah, right up until it doesn't. Sooner or later, you know, the chickens come to roost. I mean, sooner or later, all this doesn't work anymore. Yeah, I understand how you're dial turner kind of guy. But, you know, there's always something of a fundamental value underneath it. What is the fundamental value of these mortgage-backed derivatives? These mortgage-backed securities that you're given a AAA rating on? Well, it's a history of their blah, blah, just more gobbledygook in reports that he gets from. I go, where do you get these reports? Well, they're government numbers. Oh, well, heck, that'd be the truth then, you know. And then he said this, is the late 90s, right before the dot-com thing really took a dump. All right, he goes like this. He goes, well, we get numbers from private entities, too. I go, like who? He goes, Arthur Anderson. Right before they went belly up and got all kinds of fraud and everything. So I'm going, you know, I know better than to look to any of these kinds of experts or anything. Even though I love my brother-in-law, he's a good guy. He went to school. That's what he wanted to be, man. He got all kinds of initials after his name. Penn State, you know, New York University, went to all kinds of stuff. He worked at NASDAQ. He worked at Moody's. He worked at, you know, his wife was an editor with Newsweek. She worked for Martha Stewart. You know, got, you know, credits in her book for Martha Stewart, you know, for Deb. Then she's now working with, she's in charge of the web pages, all the web advertising and interface with the customers for Food Inc. You know, the do-it-yourself shows on cable and everything. You know, these are some big boys. And I tell you what their biggest concern is. They have three little boys keeping the money flowing in. They pay on, you know, I'll tell you, it's a lot. They pay in taxes, property taxes on their house. They told me how much it is. It's twice what I pay for a mortgage in our area. Just the property taxes a month.
Right.
In New York, I'm going, are you, what? And, you know, we got signs we're going to be putting up. Government doesn't work. I want my money back. That's it. I want my money back. You know, oh, I can't get it back? Well, guess what? You're fired, okay? The government doesn't work. You're fired. Oh, and I want my money back. You know, that'd be the sign. That's what we'll do. Government doesn't work. You're fired. Oh, by the way, I want my money back. That's a good one. That's a good one. We'll do that. And we got the medium here to do it. Some of the guys went out, the young guys went out and found this really good banner material that's really cheap, that black stuff over there. You know what it is? It's nylon-reinforced plastic that goes underneath rock lawns. You have that black stuff,
yeah.
But that kind of tears, you know. But then they got the new stuff that has this nylon-reinforcing, you know, kind of like a banner material. You can put it up on chain link, and it doesn't rip. Wow. And I go, ooh, and it's cheap, 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 cheap. Oh, we're going to have some fun with that. So this is what we do here. You know, how can we inject into the matrix? You know, we just got to, you know, give people things to think about. You know, how are you preparing, Jack? What are you doing? You have this foreknowledge. I mean, you can't talk about it with your family, your wife. She freaks out, you know, because
not as much as she used to.
Well, how much is that? Oh, so it's a dinner conversation now, Jack?
No, I really, you know, I try and keep it light at home. I, you know, like I said, I use a lot of comedy at home. There's a lot of joking between my daughters and myself and my wife. You know, my wife is going in for foot surgery today. So there were some things that came up that, you know, I made into, you know, something funny. You know, she had to take off her rings, her wedding rings for the surgery, and she had to use Wesson oil for that. They told her to use loose clothing. Wear loose clothing when she came in, and I can't remember what else it was, but it was something. And so the thing is, you know, she was just telling me things, and I turned it into something funny. And the thing is, you have to do that. You can't just constantly be negative. I can't do that with my wife and daughters.
You know, a good friend of ours that, you know, is also a talk show host. We won't mention names, but his initials are Charles Goyette. But the you know, I know you get in trouble. You know, the thing is that, you know, his new wife is a real estate agent, and she's successful, and she's in Scottsdale area and so on. And her concern is whenever he would have people call in, you know, that complaining about, I remember him telling us, you know, people call in going, oh, the end is nigh and this and that, you know, kind of the stuff that you're doing. And she's like, don't let those people on. they're gonna bring the market down. And so, and it happened the same. You know, I used to do real estate also. You know, I had my license. Donna got hers. I got mine. I never really, you know, did much with it, you know, but I got it, you know, at the peak, because I wanted to be able to use the multiple listing service. I want to be able, because a lot of it was very helpful doing radio. I could go in and track as the housing was going on. I wanted to see the inventory, how many houses there were. You know, the one thing that was very interesting to me, at the peak, 40% of the homes for sale in Phoenix were vacant.
Whoa.
Vacant. 40% vacant. It was all speculation.
Investors.
Yeah. It was just people from California. I can buy it for whatever. Yeah, whatever, man. Just do it. I'll flip it. You know, 40% vacant. How many things vacant now? Okay. So I'm going, yeah, so I know what's coming. Well, I get this stuff. I go up there and I find this. Well, the broker that I work with, you have to have your license with some broker. Well, the guy I chose was Donna's original broker. She went to go with some other people that were friends and so on, doing whatever reason. But I like these guys. I know. I said, you know, I'll do it with you. They'll let me do it, and I don't have to go to all their meetings and crap and everything. So I just, you know, I'll go here and I'll start focusing on commercial stuff. And I was having fun. I sell a house, you know, I do a little bit here and there. But I was more interested in having access to that information, because you got to get license and fingerprint and all that kind of crap, which I wasn't a big fan of. But you get access to the data. And I could have done it with Donna, but I wanted to be able to just have it and do what I wanted. Well, this is what happens. As I go into the office and talk to these guys, they'd ask me different things about this, or they'd hear my radio show and so on. A lot of guys, well, Ernie, you know, it's people like you that bring this down. They go, Ernie, if you keep doing that, you know, people are going to start believing that things are bad, and then it's really going to crash. So I go, you know, I mean, do you really want me to, you want to discuss this? I mean, seriously? Fred? Yeah. You know, what's your thing? I go, every one of you need to think about retiring. I go to, Mel was the broker, it was a Century 21, and I go, Mel, man, this isn't going to get better. It's going to get a lot worse. I mean, the whole industry is going to go for foreclosures and bankruptcies, and how are you going to be able to work with the banks and the bank-owned properties? Are they even going to be able to sell? I mean, I went through this whole scenario of what they should do. Within 3 months, he sold out and merged with another one and kind of, you know, let them be the broker because they had no choice. I'm sitting there telling him, going, what the heck do you, what are you looking, well, this is going, it's going to turn it always had. I go, based on what? Based on what? Where do you get this? Who is telling you? And then they say things like, well, that's just, you know, the little ne'er-do-wells that are in the industry, all of the real estate agents that came during the peak. Well, all those will go away. Well, then that leaves more for the real tried and true real estate agents. And I'm going, okay, there's a lot of truth to that. As it starts to come back, if it ever comes back, you know, then I'm sure they'll be doing better. But I'm going, we're talking years.
Years.
Years. Just the inventory. I would show them. I go, let me show it. You know, it's like they'll look at it, but they're not seeing it. I go, look at the vacancy rates. Look at how much inventory there is. Look at the speed at which they're coming on the market and the speed at which they're being sold. Just look at that. How could you possibly think that this is a temporary thing?
Denial.
Denial. It's not just a river in Egypt. You know, So this is what, when we come back in the next hour, we'll share some, you know, the more of the dark and gloomy, but, you know, there's some bright lights out there. It just might not be in this country, but, we try and put a positive spin on it, but where's the positive? Being forewarned. You know, that's what we're trying to do. Are we the bad guys for telling you what's coming and where to look for the truth? Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies here on Freedom's Phoenix. And Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Jack Gregson, just sharing some time hanging with me. Ernest Hancock, today with you. We'll be right back.